Hi, I'm Zach Ershberg, the host of Know Your Media on KISU. Tonight, we'll be joined by Christina Lortz, a Pocatello native who's now the editor-in-chief of the Idaho Capital Sun, a new digital media venture capturing local news.
This and all past episodes of the program can be found and accessed at kisu.org/programs.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Know Your Media on KISU. I am your host, Zach Gershberg, and we are really excited today to be joined by Christina Lortz, the editor-in-chief of the new Idaho Capital Sun, a digital outlet that just started, which is part of a national consortium of digital newsrooms called States Newsroom. Christina, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, and Christina is from Pocatello originally. Christina, how did you manage to go from Pocatello all the way to Boise and initiate a sort of exciting new digital media venture?
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Pocatello, lived in the same house my whole life. The first time I ever moved was to go up to college at the University of Idaho to study journalism and got my degree there and worked at the Moscow Pullman Daily News right out of college and have had the honor to work at several Idaho newspapers across the state. And I feel like I have the state pretty well triangulated at this point, having spent some time reporting in Moscow. I reported for the Idaho Falls newspaper, the Post Register, and then took an assistant editor job here in Nampa for the Idaho Press. I had covered the Idaho legislative session a couple of times for the Post Register and really fell in love with being in the Treasure Valley and in Boise and decided that I would really like to find a job that would allow me to stay there full time. And so I worked at the Idaho Press for about almost 4 years. And then the Idaho Statesman asked me to come aboard as their breaking news editor. And I did a little bit of reporting there and then was selected as the editor in chief of the Statesman and served as in that position for about 2 years and got the opportunity to start this new online project, which really excited me for a lot of reasons. And I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit. But yeah, I make it home to Pocatello pretty frequently. My parents still live there and I still got to get, you know, my cravings for good food and see some of my folks. So yeah, it's a great place to be.
Okay. Well, thank you. So the Idaho Capital Sun is part of a larger network of newsrooms in state capitals. This was a sort of nonprofit venture that began a couple of years ago. And you're going from one of the more traditional, right, newspapers, the Statesman, which is part of the McClatchy newspaper chain, which has been around since the 1850s. But we can get into McClatchy in a minute here. But going from probably the most traditional form of media to one of the newer forms in terms of as a digital nonprofit, what has that transition been like?
It's been refreshing. I'll say that for the most part, it feels really exciting to be a part of a group, to be a part of States Newsroom, which is in 21 other states. Idaho was its 21st market. And it just launched a new market in New Hampshire today. So they essentially try to start new outlets in about 5 states per year and onboard that way. And they're really focused on state politics news and some capital city issues. So their whole thing is that we know that as the journalism industry has gone through, you know, major pain points that when it comes to resources and laying off people and those traditional print advertising revenue models are, you know, completely blown up at this point, that it's exciting to be under a new umbrella where we're nonprofit. We don't rely on advertising or subscriptions of any kind. There's no paywall when you come to our website. And from an Idahoan's perspective, what really attracted me to States Newsroom is that they allow other media outlets, newspapers, TV stations, radio stations to pick up our work as a way to supplement their content in their publications or on air. And it's really exciting to me because I've worked in several newsrooms across Idaho, and it's a constant battle between the amount of stories that we have and the amount of bodies that we have to cover them. And that pain point is becoming more and more acute as time goes on. And so being able to allow the Idaho State Journal, if they wanted to pick up our work, you know, I would love to see our reporting in my hometown paper and I've sat through a lot of different, you know, budget discussions and, you know, newsroom brainstorming sessions about stories that we just can't get to. And I'm really hopeful that this can provide more statewide access to news for Idahoans all across the board. That's a really important thing for me. And sure. From, you know, a philosophical level, I think we need more reporting in this state, not less. We need more access to good investigative deep dives, not less. And so to me, that was really attractive. And one of the reasons why I decided to take this on and try to build a team here. You know, we're small but mighty. We have me as the editor and three really skilled reporters that have been in Idaho for a very long time. And I've worked with all of them in various other newsrooms across the state. So these people come from Idaho or have lived in Idaho for years and years and genuinely care about this state. And that was one of the things that I also liked, was being able to pick my own team and know what their skill sets were, and then try to figure out what are the beats that we should be covering, what goes undercovered in Idaho, and how can we help fill some of those gaps.
Right. I mean, and this is such a, I mean, there's so many fascinating components to this. I mean, number one is the state's newsroom headquarters, is that in North Carolina? And I believe Chapel.
Right. And we also Hill. Have.
Right.
Yeah, correct.
Well, I was just going to point out, it may be a coincidence, but one of the things we've talked about on this program before has been the University of North Carolina, which is also located there, which does a lot of research on local news reporting. You know, they're the ones that have counted them all up and noted that over 2,000 newspapers have closed since 2004. You know, thousands upon thousands of reporters have lost their jobs. And we're all talking local news here, right? And it's kind of interesting historically, because this decentralized network of news goes back to the founding of the United States. I mean, part of the mission of the post office was to freely, or for a penny, deliver newspapers. And so even though you're not in charge of a newspaper, there's a sense to which, right, this sort of digital initiative kind of realizes that promise. And for so long, digital online media has been about opinion, about blogging, bloggy op-eds, which is great. There's nothing wrong with that. And one thing I do want to mention that I'm really struck by, as someone who has signed up for the Idaho Capital Sun, is that it uses this sort of newsletter approach we're seeing with Substack and Ghost and other digital media ventures. So every morning when I wake up and check my email, I get an email from Christina with kind of three original articles of your own reporting at the Idaho Capital Sun. And then you aggregate kind of news from around Idaho with different links. So it's this really great thing to wake up to, I think. I don't want to be too promotional here, but it's kind of nice to, you know.
Well, you can be promotional.
This is a public radio program, ma'am. No. It's interesting that it's free. It's also interesting that there's no advertising involved, and that it's able to aggregate and link to news from around the state. It's just a really nice sort of touch to it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. Anyone can sign up for our morning newsletter at idahocapitalsun.com. And what I'm really hoping to accomplish is, again, try to expose people to news from throughout the state. You know, maybe folks in Pocatello don't check the Coeur d'Alene Press every day. I'm sure that's right. Probably the case. And so, can we highlight good reporting that's going on a very local level here in Idaho, and make sure that people have a good understanding of what's going on around them and around the state. So I kind of want to touch on something that you mentioned earlier about how we really are losing newspapers, we're losing journalists. An example that I give to help people understand kind of where we're at on a local level with that, when I was at the Statesman, we The Statesman building has been for sale for a long time and recently sold. And so we were going through a bunch of this, you know, the stuff that all, like, you know, 100 years worth of stuff in this office to try to get rid of and move out. And we unearthed this seating chart from the Idaho Statesman newsroom from when we moved from a different part of the building into the part that I was working in. And there were 100 names on that seating chart. The Idaho Statesman has about 20 employees for the newsroom right now. And so we're covering, you know, more people that are moving here, the growth and business boom and housing boom and all of that kind of stuff. We have more and more people to cover and less people to cover it with. And so it's really important for people to understand that if you are consuming news in some way, you really need to find a way to financially support it as well. Or some of these newspapers and TV and radio struggle with the same things. Truly, sure. It really is, you know, the news industry in general is really struggling. And so, you know, if you can find a way to make sure that you're paying for a digital subscription to the journal or to, you know, we're a nonprofit, so we take donations and things like that. You know, if you can find ways to make sure that that we're supporting the people that are trained in this, to know how to do this work. I think that's another thing that when you talk about this rise of opinion and blogs and different things like that, which is all great. Everyone has thoughts and we can talk about those things, but we need trained professional journalists who understand how open meeting law works, how to get public records, especially when you're denied, which happens daily or weekly at news agencies sure. across the state. How do we get public officials who aren't as media friendly to talk to us. All of those sort of things are really important. And as we move from, you know, traditional print product that shows up at your doorstep in the morning and all of the news that's in there is already 24 hours old, or if you're, you know, sitting down to the 5 o'clock news, a lot of that stuff that's on the 5 o'clock news happened hours ago, you know? And so how do we make sure that we have trained professionals that understand how to distill information into understandable language in nearly in real time. You know, that's something that we don't always get right. And there's a lot of room for improvement with that. Sure. But we need people who kind of have this background, this institutional knowledge, this experience to make sure that we're presenting factual information. I see so much stuff on Facebook from family and friends that is just untrue. It's untrue. Right. And I wish more people would take the time to run whatever assertion they're making through the Google machine and just try to find ways to validate what you're sharing and what you're telling your friends and your family that might not be based in fact and in truth. So that's a huge deal for us. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I hope the newsletter can help kind of put it all in one place for people so that they know where to go to get information that is based in that truth.
You know, what strikes me as interesting is, and you've been vocal about these issues plaguing local news. And I think one of the issues, obviously, with the rise of the internet in the late 20th century, the rise of things like Craigslist, which hurt classified ads, Facebook and Google digital advertising, which has sucked up sort of all of the attention. So I guess I'm curious. You went from, right, newspapers at least still had subscription revenue, though not much. But now you're leaping into a venture that is relying on the largesse of kind of charity, goodwill, donations, no advertising revenue, no subscriptions. So I'm curious, in thinking about this long term, both with the Capital Sun that you're in charge of and then States Newsroom, I mean, do you feel confident that this is a direction that is sustainable through donors? Do you see this kind of moving forward and sustaining itself effectively?
I've had that question a lot, and it's always kind of interesting to me because having been a journalist for, you know, for over a decade at this point, I've never felt job security in my life during my entire career. I have always operated under the assumption I could get laid off tomorrow. And, right. You know, and so I think this is just an extenuation of that feeling. We really are seeing people come around to this idea that, okay, you know, in the 1990s, maybe newspapers shouldn't have just put everything on the internet and given it away for free, because we're really having to retrain folks on why it's important to financially contribute to the news you consume. But to me, there's always going to be uncertainty. It doesn't matter if you're working for a TV station who's struggling to get on-air ads. It doesn't matter if you're working for a newspaper that if you lost a major car dealership tomorrow, that you'd have to lay three people off, you know? And so it's a different kind of financial stress, but it does feel a little bit better to me, like from a philosophical standpoint of, our readers are the people who care. They're literally giving us their money because they believe in what we're doing. And we really want to meet their expectations. And we want to make sure that we're providing enough good content that they see, oh my gosh, you know, I'm going to give $10 a month to the Idaho Capital Sun because I really appreciate what they're doing. And so, you know, there's uncertainty in media revenue where in any crevice that you look. And it, to me, it's just kind of an extenuation of how I've always felt that I'm going to do this until someone tells me I can't. And, you know, and just hope for the best, cross your fingers and hope for the best. And hopefully people see, you know, and I think especially after the last few years, there are more and more people coming around to this idea of, oh my gosh, if we don't have someone sitting in these city council meetings or attending, you know, the Idaho House sessions on initiative bills and things like that, how do we know what's going on? How do we know what the decisions that are being made and why are they being made that way? You know, we need reporters looking into things like campaign finance, which is something that we really want to do for this upcoming election. And those kind of things that you can't. One example that I give to people all the time is you can go follow the Pocatello Police Department's Facebook page and you can see that they're posting about, you know, happenings or events or here's this press release on this car crash or whatever. But they're never going to post about, you know, how many rape kits they've tested in the last year. That's something that we need reporters looking into, you know, so you can get this kind of surface level information on social media from the agencies that are important to you. But you're not going to have people actually evaluating what those agencies are up to, how they're spending their money, what they're not doing that you wish they would, all of those kind of things. And so when we lose reporters out of communities, that's the thing that we lose the most. It's not necessarily about, well, I don't know what happened yesterday. It genuinely is, why is the school district running yet another bond? You know, why are we paying for supplemental levies every single time that we have to go to the ballot box? Well, perhaps that's because the Idaho legislature isn't really holding up inside of the bargain to fund education. And I hope that people see the value in that.
It's kind of interesting. You mentioned bonds, and in one of the famous research studies about the importance of local news actually focused on that issue of local bonds, that in the news deserts that have arisen without local papers, where they see a huge difference is that municipalities will pass bonds at outrageous interest rates with major issues if they don't have a local reporter on the issue. So it's kind of interesting how that plays out. I do have a question about the state's newsrooms, because these are all going to be located in the state capitals, which makes sense. And Idaho's interesting, right? Because Boise is both the capital as well as the largest city in the state, you know, kind of by a long shot. But I think about Montana that has one, and how Helena's very small, and then Billings is the biggest city, but it's way out east. Now, here in Pocatello and IF, we're not the largest municipalities in the state, obviously. And so I'm just curious, like, do you have a plan to potentially expand your coverage to eastern Idaho at all? I know right now, I think the journalists are located in Boise, which is, it's called the Idaho Capital Sun, so that makes sense. But I'm just curious about us here in the hinterlands, which you know a lot about being from here.
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. So it actually depends on the newsroom where the reporters are located. So Montana is a great example that they do have about half their staff in Helena, and then they have someone in Billings. And they, when we're all not scared of a pandemic, there is some travel back and forth and all that kind of stuff. So it really does depend on the needs of the state. And I, as someone who has spent a lot of time in eastern Idaho and in north Idaho, and now here in southwest Idaho, it's really important to me to make sure that we're trying to get to stories throughout the state as much as we can. And so I've really tried to reach out to people from all corners of the state for guest opinions. That's another aspect of our website, is that we're running some commentary. And so I've asked people that I know in Moscow, for instance, a city council member that I know in Moscow, could you write a column every once in a while for us, just to make sure that we have a presence in all parts of the state. As someone who's spent so much time elsewhere, I just love Idaho. I love that there's so much that makes us us. And so that's important to me, to make sure that we have voices from all over the place.
And so you mentioned opinion guest commentary pieces. So it seems like kind of a lot of hard news as well as some political commentary. Is there any sort of long-term vision, not just with your publication, but others within there, to expand to larger cultural issues or sporting events? I will give a little bit of a plug. I absolutely loved the Q&A with Ken Burns earlier this month, relating to the Hemingway documentary that ran on PBS. That was a real big score. And he mentioned he spent time in Pocatello, even though he was up there hanging out in Ketchum.
I couldn't believe that when I read it. I was like, oh my gosh. But I, first of all, like, in my bio on the website, it says that I love nerding out to Ken Burns. So this was like one of the best things to have ever happened to me. But yeah, that's a good point. I don't know if we'll ever make it into sports coverage, but I do think there's opportunities to just talk about Idaho living and what it means to be from here. And hopefully the next reiteration of us, I hope, is that we can fundraise to have a full-time environmental reporter.
Oh, wow.
So talking about the outdoors and how do we protect our natural spaces and things like that. So I do think it's important that people understand that we're not just covering the legislature and that's it.
Sure.
That there are other aspects of Idaho life that we really want to get to, including, growth and affordable housing.
Sure.
That has been such a huge deal here in the Treasure Valley, but it's happening everywhere in Idaho. The Idaho State Journal just did a great series on the lack of housing and the lack of affordable housing that I thought was so important that we talk about those sort of issues elsewhere. And it's happening in Moscow and happening all over the place. So these problems are statewide. And so we really do want to make sure that we're trying to get to as much as that as we can, recognizing, that we have four people and there's going to be some hard decisions that we have to make for which stories we go after and things like that. But I would love to see us move more into some of that other slice of life kind of stuff and see what we can do there.
Okay.
I think we all, as Reporters Together, just really love being from Idaho and really want to make sure that it stays protected and that our public lands remain public and accessible and that our water quality is good and that folks in agriculture have access to clean water and things like that. So there's so much that goes into what makes Idaho, Idaho, and we're just starting out, but I really do envision us trying to branch out as much as we can.
Well, and I think it's really exciting because other digital media ventures, ProPublica comes to mind as one of the most famous as a sort of investigative journalism consortium. But you can't pump out five daily stories of big investigative pieces like that necessarily. And so, they partner and when they do a new piece, it's usually really big and well done. But then on the other hand, we're seeing, Substack and people monetizing their own newsletters. And I think it's really exciting to see, because for decades now in media research, it's been like, what do we do about local? And so this is, I think really exciting as an opportunity. And you referenced earlier how newspapers in the 90s sort of gave away their stuff for free. That created such a standard or an expectation. And so, we'll see. It's very interesting. The Salt Lake City Tribune was the first big daily newspaper to go to a nonprofit model. And we've seen other newspapers try to operate as a function of trust, but that's not necessarily the case with newspapers here in Idaho. McClatchy, which is this huge chain of newspapers, they filed for bankruptcy earlier last year. It kind of goes back to 15 years ago in 2006. They bought out the Knight Ridder chain for some $4.5 billion. Our last episode before the pandemic, we actually had on a former McClatchy and Knight Ritter who worked at a newspaper for them when that deal went down. And there was so much debt. And then later it was in bankruptcy. A hedge fund took over. Christina, your departure from the Statesman, you know, made the Washington Post. It was about getting resources for reporters that worked under you. And I do want to say one of the things that struck me as so fascinating about it, and this was included in the Washington Post piece, was that as the editor-in-chief, yeah, you were complaining, but you were you used it as a moment to encourage people to subscribe to local news, and yet there was still the falling out.
Right. And that's the interesting part about what happened. And I'm happy to talk about this really openly, because I do think it's important that people understand what happened. But I essentially tweeted about, from my own personal account, about how we were unable to secure Excel for our investigative reporter, our state politics reporter, who needed it to be able to look at big, huge files for the census data. And in my tweet, I basically said, you know, this is genuinely what we're up against. And to me, it was a very tangible example of how newspaper companies do not have enough money to provide the resources, the staffing that we need to be able to function and do our jobs at a pace and at the ability that we need to be able to do. And so I said, hey, like, we can't even afford Excel for a reporter. If you don't pay for your news, we will, you know, newspapers will legitimately cease to exist. Please subscribe to the Idaho Statesman if you have the ability to do so. And McClatchy really didn't enjoy that I had said that out loud and in the public sphere. On the one hand, I understand, you know, as the company, they want to put their best foot forward. I get it. From my perspective, I've written column after column asking people to donate to our fundraising campaigns that we've held over the last year, especially during the pandemic. I've asked people in columns to please subscribe, that I know that everybody out there is facing financial challenges, but it's so important that if you want us to exist, that you have to financially support the journalists that you read. And McClatchy just didn't really see eye to eye with me on how I presented that information to the public. And so I was fired. And what's genuinely interesting about that situation is McClatchy's also going through a lot of situations where their newsrooms are unionizing, that basically we have hit such a level of lack of resources and protections for jobs that we're seeing newspapers all across the country. It's not just McClatchy papers, but newspapers all across the country unionize to try to protect themselves and their jobs. And the first major initiative from the Idaho Statesman's Union was to try to go to the mat to protect their manager, which is, as a manager, you're not allowed to be in the union. And most people really fight the managers in those sort of situations. Well, so that was another really interesting thing that came from that.
And we should point out, like, one of the reasons it's so important for investigative reporters, really all reporters, to have a file like Excel is to be able to scrape data, collate information. I mean, it's a really basic, expected thing. And I think, again, what struck me was about it is that you were encouraging new subscriptions. You know, I mentioned McClatchy started in the Central Valley where I used to live in California. And what is so striking about it was a family sort of run chain. It had the Sacramento Bee, the Modesto Bee, the Fresno Bee, a lot of different bees. And then it, you know, got into the big game of high finance and, you know, it really changed. And so even when we say McClatchy is who you got into it with and ultimately left and was fired and everything like that, is that McClatchy isn't the McClatchy of years ago. I mean, it came out of bankruptcy protections.
And now it's owned by a hedge fund, you know,
Who?
And it's when we talk about being worried about, you know, are you scared about going into the nonprofit realm of, you know, having to fundraise and things like that? I'm genuinely more scared by a hedge fund whose sole purpose in life is to turn a profit and make money. And how do they do that? By slashing the very limited resources that are left, by laying off people to meet their bottom line. So we really have to as a society and as a community worry about the intentions of of these big hedge funds that are starting to look into newspaper companies. And McClatchy is not the only one that's experienced that either. And so it's just a genuinely, you know, tenuous, scary time to be a journalist. But I think that there's still such a need for what we do. And at the end of the day, like, I just hope that, I don't think there's a silver bullet to solve some of these problems, but I'm hoping that some of these initiatives like nonprofit journalism can really at least be a patch in the quilt to help with things.
And I think it's such a great point to sort of end on here, Christina. And I really want to thank you, because this idea that there's a silver bullet that can improve the national discourse and inform the public, you know, it may not be perfectly States newsroom and everything like that. But nationally, we have, you know, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, we have magazines like The Atlantic and The Economist and The New Yorker, like all of these sort of national platforms that provide effective reporting, but at the local level. And that's kind of what was the vision a few hundred years ago of how to get this thing going, is making sure that we have that throughout the country. So it's really exciting, this venture to follow. And we want to wish you the best of luck. And hopefully you'll come back to Pocatello and be able to report on some of your favorite food spots and let everyone else in the state know about it. But Christina Lawrence, thank you so much for joining us today here on Know Your Media. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Know Your Media on KISU airs on the third Monday of every month at 7:30 p.m. during the academic school year. This and all past episodes of the program can be found and accessed at kisu.org/programs. This program is hosted by Dr. Zach Gershberg, professor of journalism and media studies at Idaho State University. We congratulate him on a successful fifth year as host, and we look forward to having Know Your Media returning to KISU in August. This is KISU Pocatello, Idaho Falls, Rexburg.